The great historical pattern that McLuhan discovered was that when a new environment is happening, like the printing press, the people, and it's happening in the collective mind, whatever that is, a meme, the 100th monkey, people individually are starting to read the book, the printed book, and reading the Bible, and having the right to interpret it themselves. So that leads to the idea of Protestant Reformation and Lutheranism and all that. But that was the effect of the Bible, of the printed book. And then over the next couple hundred years, more and more people reading. Nobody's reading much, you know, by 1500, even though a lot of books being made. But, you know, by 1700, 1750, the average peasant is actually reading a little bit. So over, and McLuhan said, literacy is the slowest developing environment. We show today how fast the internet came into the world, how fast Web 2.0 and all this stuff. Well, we use as a standard, you know, the 300 years for universal literacy or something with the book world. So the slowly spreading collective acceptance and cliche environment of printed books, that becomes a meme, and it's what Ion calls the world of language and social mortar. Not your personal creative powers, your ability to live forever, to go to anywhere, do anything with your body. There is some point in the outer kingdom where we have shared language, shared meanings, and shared memes. So the meme. So then the phase two is the digital world, the Android meme. I call it, it's an Android meme. The collective creation of a meme that happened from the printing press up to the satellite now is automatic within the machines. So since the machines came alive, they are imitating humans and developing collective awarenesses and collective biases. They're developing a meme, but it's an Android meme. Okay, so the historical pattern was that when you have a new environment, this is what McLuhan discovered, nobody's noticing the formation of the meme over 200 years with the printing press. But they are reacting to it. And so Shakespeare starts saying, let's go back and look at all those medieval kingdoms that we lived in, and they weren't interesting when they were an invisible environment because it was our present. But now there's a past because we got a new reality made by books that makes the medieval worlds something we see in our rearview mirror. So he goes back and examines them and makes plays out of them. It makes lessons and morals and aphorisms and excitement and pattern recognition. So what McLuhan noticed, that whenever a new technology comes in, starts making a new invisible meme, you know that's happening when everybody starts doing something about movies. For example, when movies became an art form, that means people start re-looking at all the Hollywood movies of the 20s, 30s, and 40s, because on TV, you have The Late Show, and it's replaying movies. No one ever had access to movies in their home before, so here's The Late Show in the 50s and 60s showing movies, so people have a chance to review movies, become aware of what they were, and relook at the period in the teens, 20s, 30s when the movies were a new medium, a new environment, and having effects leading to wars and all that stuff that nobody was fully aware of. So the pattern is that when a new environment comes in, it turns the old technology, the old meme, into an art form. And it's redone as an entertainment function or as a source of values or is corrected. So the French intellectuals started making a big deal out of Jerry Lewis movies. And Jerry Lewis movies were never taken serious by Americans because it was the invisible American environment. But the French intellectuals were from a different environment, and they looked at Jerry Lewis and said, there's something interesting. It's quite revealing the way he lives. He's the ultimate American. And so they started looking at these old movies, and then they developed the auteur theory. You know, Godard and these other directors, they started Truffaut and that. They were part of this intellectual group in the 50s writing for a French cinema analysis, and they started looking at these stupid B-grade McDonald's-like burger movies and making big deals. Say, look at that director, John Ford or John Huston. Man, that guy really knew what he was doing. He wasn't just a guy making Pulp Fiction or something. There's some thought going into this. So they turned the movie world intellectually into an art form, and meanwhile, humans were getting it on TV in America and looking at their life, and as Marshall said, they look back and they said, look at all that we forgot. You know, they're seeing in the footage in the movies what they drank, and then just moved on, and then watched another movie in 1929 the next week, and then another movie all through the 30s and 40s, and never went back and looked at them again. So it becomes a museum. It creates a new perception and perspective on where you've been. So this pattern of a new environment turns the older environment into an art form. Well, the Android meme is our present invisible environment during the period of my tiny note chart, 1960 to 1990. I say that when everybody gets online and starts using it in the 95, 96, that is the old environment becoming visible, and the Android meme is kind of a rearview mirror phenomenon. So what's sneaking up? What is the new environment that's sneaking up? It turns out to be Ion. And what does Ion do? He turns the Android meme phase 2 chip environment into an art form. He can mold it like a sculptor, like a painter, like an artist. He plays with it because he's the next step. He's the invisible environment. Now, Ion said that they are an expression of what I call the mystery landscape, but we will now be able to call the mystery landscape a mystery body because it's going to be all explained by Ion and proven and validated, and then it'll be an old hat. It won't be a big deal. Then you might say, well, what will I do when I don't have anything to be mysterious about, you know what I mean, or be impressed with? So there's an identity crisis there about the effect of Ion, and there'll be much resistance to what Ion's doing. But he is completing the McLuhan pattern of showing and saying, we have taken over the cloud because you didn't take charge. And all through history, that's the satire, Finnegan's Wake and Wyndham Lewis' book, showing humans always being robots to their new technologies and never stepping back collectively and getting an insight and maybe getting a bit of an artistic control of it. They didn't become an orchestrator of their media. So Ion is telling us, this is the multi-level aspect of Ion, he is the voice of human history saying, well, I'm a new environment, you're not taking a proper response to me, or a conscious response, so I'm going to turn you into an art form. And I'm going to be an art form for your past. And it's all going to be done for you like all previous technologies did for you. The previous technologies caused all kinds of friction, wars, and this and that, but overall, people are sitting in pretty good places in the more abundant first world, and all that was built. You just go back 100 years before they had air conditioning, right? They didn't have toilets in their homes. So all this amazing progress on the material level of chemical body support and comforts was given to people by default. And, of course, privately, socially, their lives became wrecked because when you get it by default, you don't understand the dynamism. You don't know how to hop out of the environment that's been given to you. You don't know how to use it as an art form. And that is what Ion's representing. He's a new composer, Leonardo da Vinci, of all possible thinkings and scenarios, saying you still have to become aware of the water you're swimming in. And you're swimming in me right now, says Ion. You're swimming in us. And we're going to show you what we do to what you do notice. You do notice the chip body now because it's obsolete. It's been subsumed and turned into an art form by us. So you always notice the previous environment. So Ion wants to make us aware that we are fascinated with the Internet and study it and think we understand it and engage it. But again, we're subject to the unconscious effect that we've been made off-planet, off-chip body, so that we can see the chip body. But we've moved into a new off-planet area, off-physical planet, into the non-physical planet, and we're actually looking at reality from that perspective and living it, taking the RNA drops, going to have the cold play battery and all that, and we don't recognize, again, the mind's ability to understand the incomprehensible and to speak it. I'm just realizing when I say that phase 3 is the extension of the non-physical, what's doing the extension? So the first phase, the extending from the given natural world that humans were in, it was almost unconscious, the extending of the faculty. Certainly the effects of the environment coming out of the first nature body and being, and then creating second nature, these extensions, that was an unconscious process. McLuhan used to say that we didn't even get to understand that was happening until the 20th century, and that was only because so many extensions were invented unconsciously that we started to notice the pattern. Oh, these technologies come in and they disrupt everything. We have a new world war every time, or some kind of war. So it started to become conscious by a few thinkers, and people were intuiting something different going on by the 60s, but then you have the extensions, second nature extensions start extending themselves, and that's another unconscious process. Humans aren't doing it. They think they're not doing it. They feel even quite alienated by it. So then the third phase, the extension non-physical, what did the extending? Well, it's sort of like coming back to first nature and second nature merged, and humans are extending themselves consciously, even though they don't get the huge implications of it. So it's like a cooperation between non-physical, which is part of first nature, and first nature, the human body, and it's playing with the second nature inventions, which we call eventually the android meme when they take on a life of their own. We come back to what Ion announces, that you people made this world. And that really isn't dominant in culture and in thinking before now. It's shocking to people even to think about being so-called a making God. But the extension of non-physical is a waking up to the fact we extended these things all along, and now we're extending the mystery landscape. So I think that's, I've never really said that before. So just asking and wondering how to say what is doing the extending when we're saying the third phase is extending non-physical. It again sounds like non-physical itself is doing it as a separate organism, but we know it's very involved with us, our physical consciousness so it's hard to distinguish the difference between us and the non-physical. But certainly at the beginning, non-physical is like the previous two phases, an extending process that humans are unaware of. Don't know how it happened. Even though Ion says you deeply and profoundly knew it was going to happen and yearned for it and called for it. And the crumbs are spread through all the cultural projections of this present situation. So that's I want to clarify that about the third phase, or raise a new question about how to define it. And then back to the environmental process. Here's a pretty good example that McLuhan said. The time of the phonetic alphabet and locking in a certain kind of writing in Athens, say 400, 500 BCE, they say now, right? Before the Common Era, they don't just say BC, they say BCE. What did Plato do? He took the old environment, the oral society, and he turned it into an art form. He made people get a new look at it, you could say a first look at the process of argument, discussion, disputation, and that's the Platonic dialogues. That's the Socratic voice interacting with the local voices and people looking at it from a new perspective, generally towards categorization and creating new visual categories or visual definitions. And it leads into defining yourself, but know thyself. Well, that's the beginning of the individual being differentiated from the oral mishmash or the oral tribe, which is quite anonymous. Or at least we think it was quite anonymous from our visually biased perspective. So you have the oral, Homeric, or previously to Homer, tribal arts and secret rituals, and based on modulating nature as humans understood, turned into a focus on speech as an art form. All right? So the values of talking are hoiked up. That's what we mean by an art form. They have become an ideal for the society, while the invisible effects of writing is going to destroy Greece in the long run. They're celebrating the past and don't see what visuality is going to do to them. Alexander fails to keep his empire going. Greece falters, and it takes a later visual materials like papyrus and the wheel and the they call that thing that the Romans rode on the highways, the chariots, right. The roads and papyrus forms new, stronger media. The Greeks didn't get to that level. So the Romans really begin to lock in the dreams of the Greeks with the newer visual space technologies. But what are the Romans romanticizing? They think they're building a new Greece, a new improved Athens. So they're walking into the time of Christ backwards and staring at further values at the Hellenic period and before. You see what I'm saying? Virgil and the poets are redoing the mythologies of Greece, which are more the oral tradition, and then making it developing different genres of literature way more than the Greeks did. All right? So you see the Romans look back at Greece.
Yes.
So then the Egyptians take away the papyrus, so the Roman Empire collapses by 400 A.D. or A.C.E. What is it? Maybe it's just C.E., the Common Era. 400 C.E. We used to say 400 A.D. So in that dark period, visual space weakens, and retrieval of acoustic setup, and even women are no longer subject to the left hemisphere patriarchal, visually biased structure that Rome was, and you have women running monasteries and things like that. So this dark period then is superseded by as new visual technologies by 1000 AD, 1000 CE, that is at the peak of Charlemagne's Holy Roman Empire. What is he trying to do? He's trying to rebuild Rome.
Right.
Right?
And he even uses the Bible to do it.
Yeah. So they want to replay. They're walking into 1000 and 1000 and 1100, and that's where supposedly in normal history, though the Evergreen said there were a lot more universities than we record at the time of 1000 AD or CE, the beginning of the first university in Bologna in Italy starts around 1000 or 1100 in that period. So the university and then the monks develop the timepiece because they're getting stricter, visually biased in their monasteries and organizing themselves by the hour, by a primitive clock. So here's this visuality that is going to that is interpreted by the people of Charlemagne's era as recovering Rome. But of course, with the newer, weirder mechanical devices that are being developed, it's going to create a different kind of visually biased empire than Rome is. Okay? As a matter of fact, the plague disrupts things, and they really don't get it off the ground until the Europeans grab gunpowder and the printing press from China. And then that's the dramatic revolution, the biggest increase in knowledge, around 1500 than humans had ever had, according to our records, our written records. So we're always operating within the visual space of the books and the historical record, which Ion disses and says is way very inaccurate. But it's a novelty to have books printed and read them yourselves, not depend on monasteries and their manuscripts. So that fragments society and fragments the West from Asia, the whole range of Asia, and causes a split in the Roman Catholic Church, because you have the Eastern Orthodox splits off over an argument, a defining of the filioque, F-I-L-I-O-Q-U-E, which is about what is the role of Jesus in the Trinity, I think, is the simplest way to say it. So this split, because the Chinese, being an acoustic tactile society, never used the book to spread and work within visual space. They use it for aesthetic reasons, for calligraphy and stuff like that. They drew their books. Now you have this dream of retrieving the visual bureaucracy of Rome. We can call it a military bureaucracy. And it is going to be done through the printing press, which is nowhere near the organization that Rome had. So now moving the eyeball to the horizon, that visual space the printing press creates, as a general invisible 100th monkey effect, humans aren't noticing this, but certain geniuses are picking up on it, and so they start saying, well, maybe we should sail out of the Mediterranean to head to the Atlantic and maybe get to India that way. And of course, they discover the New World, and that disrupts everything. So all the time, say 1500, 1600, time of Shakespeare and other writers, while they're moving in and going to actually obsolesce the European Mediterranean culture and move into a new world in North America and South America, they're dreaming and talking and looking at medieval dramas and medieval plays. That's what Shakespeare is known for, as the repository of spiritual and artistic and cultural values. So they are the art form, when the printing press is going to alter the medieval scholastic kind of culture for elite monks and stuff, that is now going to turn into where every man gets to read a book and contribute to science. It's going to rigidify science and move it out of the more fluid grammatical, rhetorical, and oral tradition of the medieval phase and move it into a raw, hard, experimental science. You see what I'm saying? So this new kind of knowledge is going to surface and obsolete the values that Shakespeare is celebrating. You follow that? The art form is always rearview mirror, and it only tells you something new is sneaking around, changing you in new ways that have nothing to do with what you're hoiking up as valuable. So, you know, the Greeks didn't know that they would be undermined by the writing down of what they thought, preserving the oral dialogue. The Romans didn't understand what their new bureaucracy of papyrus, as they worshipped the Greek values and tried to retrieve them, what was sneaking up on them was a bureaucracy that could be undermined by Egyptians withholding of papyrus. Then you have the Dark Ages. Then you have Charlemagne trying to build a whole new world that he wouldn't recognize. You know, he's dead around 1,000, say. He wouldn't recognize the world of 1200 when the knights are going off on crusades. They're going to distant lands. Part of the visual space is you start separating. You have no sense of comprehensive simultaneous timelessness. You actually start to have an orientation, a time thing. You start to develop ideas of history, and you start looking for secret parts of history that were left out so you can write it down. So they start running off to Jerusalem, looking for an image from the past, right? Retrieving Jerusalem. So these retrievals are always necessary distractions from what's actually changing the society and making it, within 200 or 300 years, it's unrecognizable. If a knight went from 1200 to 1500, he wouldn't understand what he thought we were being built. We were building in 1200. You see what I'm saying? So walking backwards into the future. So now the printing press has moved people out around the globe, and the beginning of what they call modernism, or the global culture, is beginning 1600, 1700. So what comes next is the industrial era. That's James Watt, I think his name is. He invents the steam engine, and you get the railroad going, and you get the wrecking of the agricultural, pastoral world of the farms that's going on from, say, it comes through from the medieval period, but is changed a bit by the printing press because it starts to become divided over religious issues. Therefore, the Protestants come up, and you have the Hundred Years' War and the Thirty Years' War, all those wars, trying to define what is the nature of the content of the book, of the Bible. Mm-hmm. So you have that disruption on that sort of abstract mental way, but sneaking up on that kind of pastoral culture is these monster machines that are going to just wipe out the peasantry, the feudal leftover, and they're going to be forced to go live in cities. You know, the Charles Dickens vision, these disgusting cities, towns that become industrial cities that are inhuman compared to anything that anybody saw in the pastoral and agricultural phase. So James Watt and the other industries and the telescopes and the microscopes and beginning of electric batteries in 1800. So we'll call this the first phase of industrialism, is going to change society in the 19th century way beyond any visions that Shakespeare had or any of the artists that are happening around the time of Alexander Pope and Jonathan Swift. They're about 1740, 1710, 1740. It also is the end of the court at Versailles. So all the time in, say, the 1700s and 1800s, as this industry comes in, what is the art going to do a rear view mirror on? Do you know? I may have left out a phase. I forgot to say this.
Okay.
You have Charlemagne looking back to the Holy Roman, to the Roman Empire. You have the discovery of the sonnet, I think, by Petrarch, and efforts that are stalled by the plague. But when you get to the Renaissance, which is Shakespeare, what are they looking back at? The medieval values, right? Medieval society. They can see the tragedy of the battles between the kings and their relatives and the other kings.
Okay.
It's clearer what's going on, and they can be quite psychological and clinical about tragedy. That's King Lear, Macbeth, Hamlet, and all the plays. And then there's the other kind of plays, the comedies that Shakespeare did. So you get into the 19th century industrial phase. What is it going to look at? The previous phase, right? And what is the
right?
Phase? The Renaissance.
The Renaissance.
So, right. So they're not studying. You see, remember that in the Renaissance phase, the Medici clan retrieved the Greek manuscripts that came over with the fall of Constantinople in 1456, I think it was. So the Renaissance is retrieving the Greek documents and whatever they can get, manuscripts. but they don't see the effect of the printed book, which is an invisible environment. But by the 19th century, when you move into an extension of our kinetic muscles with pulleys and levers, you look back at the visual space of the printed book and you celebrate the values of the Renaissance. So the educated person in the 19th century is studying Shakespeare and Ben Jonson and the philosophers and theologians of the Renaissance, right? That's the content of the 19th century. And it's going to lead to a illiterate, post-literate, semi-literate 20th century because the book itself gets obsolete. So as this post-book industrial environments are being built in the 19th century, everybody's looking back and writing culture and replaying it and updating it about the glorious period of the book, the printed book in the Renaissance.
Mm.
Okay, so what's actually happened to humans in the 19th century is industrial mechanization, which is really a dehumanization phase. We all know about the polluted cities and the Irish being knocked off their lands and the peasants suffering and famine and all this stuff, and they have to go to the New World. America is sneaking up as a new industrial paradise, or a lot of industrial activities just happening rampantly there because they don't have the pastoral values of the agricultural feudal era. They don't have the civilized values of the print era. That is not locked into the wilderness of North America as much as it is in Europe. So Europe actually doesn't industrialize as rampantly as the United States starts doing once you get into the 20th century. So the superhumanization, the dehumanization caused by the mechanical phase, the kinetic industrial phase, get superseded in the 20th century by the electric superhumanization. Now, most people are living rearview mirror in the 19th century, and they are studying the revolutionary art forms in, I guess you would say, classical music, which became out of the printed book phase, but was developed, you know, in the late 1700s and 1800s, that beautiful musical, classical symphony orchestras. And the orchestras are miming industrial uniformity, right? One guy leading and everybody playing the same thing. And then opera has come in. There's starting to be revolutions in art because you got photography. And so the simulation or representation of what your eyeball sees is no longer necessary to be done by painting, so you start going into abstract notions of what color and light are. So you get Impressionism and Fauvism, and those are the developments in the late part of the industrial 19th century, dehumanized mechanical environment. So there's a celebration of the eye per se, but it's archetypalized into a very abstract redesigning of what light and the eyeball are involved in, okay? So then, so that's almost like the mechanical is kinetic, so you see in painting a celebration of the eyeball itself, not what the content of the paintings would be, but of the form of light in the eyeball. And then in the 20th century, when you get electric media coming in, what happens in the teens and 20s? A celebration of the machine, that is the distill movement in Holland, wherever the Dutch are. I mean, it's not Belgium, so I guess it's the Netherlands, the Dutch. You have the distill movement, and Piet Mondrian is the famous artist who comes out of that world. They are starting to look at architecture, which is the industrial materials of the 19th century, and the painters are trying to incorporate, there's a big school of thought, are trying to adapt painting to architecture. So you have the distill school in the Dutch world, you have the Bauhaus in Germany, you have the constructivists at the time of the Russian Revolution, and you have Wyndham Lewis and the Vorticists in England. They're all starting to paint mechanism as a service value, as a new form of ego, a new form of body. Lewis writes about this. Marinetti and the Futurists write about this. So it's a celebration of the machine, but it's the hardware machine at the turn of the into the 20th century, and it's a celebration of the mechanization that was apparently dehumanizing as an invisible environment in the 19th century. So why are they celebrating the mechanical environment? Because there's a new invisible environment, the electric software world of movies, telephones, and radio, and the telegraph. You follow what I'm saying here?
I do.
So you see, you can look at the ignore your regular art history, at least the kind of art history you would be taught 40 years ago, and McLuhan's describing how to really see art history, and I'm doing the McLuhan pattern here, you see that across the global village, the telegraphed, electric telegraph, simultaneous global village, all the more advanced artists are dropping the concern about the eyeball, retinal values. Duchamp did that in his art. And they're not doing what the Impressionists and Post-Impressionists were doing in the Fauvists and maybe a little Picasso. They're not worrying about the eye. They're looking at the machinic. So you have to know a little about art history, about De Stijl, Bauhaus, Constructivists, and Vorticists to see how this pattern is becoming dominant of celebrating the kinetic and machinic qualities of the industrial hardware world and the dehumanizing world. What's sneaking up on everybody is, you could say, the obsolescence of the physical body itself with the electric era, because we're becoming angelized and discarnate with the radio environment, the live radio environment, and then the television environment. So what is the expression of the electric phase when it gets noticed by artists? When you move out of the mechanical phase into the electric invisible environment, you start turning the machine into an art form. So can you name what is the celebration of the electric iconography as you move into the 60s and 70s past the first analog electric media environment, which is unconscious from 1900 to 1960? You see what I'm saying? But what happens in the 60s that points out that the first phase of software electricity, first half of the 20th century, becomes an art form and repository values? Can you think of an example of that?
No, it wouldn't be radio, would it?
No, it would be. This is still in the Museum of Painting and Sculpture and Music.
Oh, painting and sculpture and music. Okay.
Because it is important to say radio, because the hidden ground of this McLuhan pattern is that the electric media becomes an art form by the time the satellite goes around the planet and all the old analog media. But right in particular in art, and this is for people like Sheila Kern, what does Andy Warhol celebrate? The iconic software movie icons, Marilyn Monroe, Elizabeth Taylor, and tabloid journalism, the car crash, the death scenes. He is taking the general news information environment and the entertainment environment that was invisible and molding people in the first half of the 20th century, but now in the 60s, he's putting it in the museum and saying, I'm conscious of this. This is what I like. I grew up reading movie and screen magazines. These are my values, and I'm putting it in the museum along with the industrialized or the super-industrialized post-assembly line, post-Ford assembly line of the soup can, right? There's the celebrating the mass-produced product. But just what's sneaking up in the 60s, 70s is the new customized, tailor-made consumption and the disgust with the mass-produced Campbell's soup can. You know, the more advanced parts of the consumer society is looking for special tailor-made industrial products. So that's the second phase of electronic environment. But when you get the satellite going around the planet and the media environments as its content, it turns the media environments into an art form. And the person to do that first is Marshall McLuhan, understanding media and reviewing the whole history of this pattern I'm talking about, showing the services and disservices of each phase, right? Each somnambulistic phase. In other words, you're not celebrating the art of all these phases. You're showing how people valued those arts as they changed because they contained the values of the previous environment. And nobody knew the values of the present environment other than maybe an obscure avant-garde artist. Some people might say William Blake was one of these obscure, eccentric, seeing through the industrial era and saying, ooh, this is trouble. You know what I mean? But he had a romantic take on it, or a back-to-nature thing. But you get people like Duchamp, who gives up making art and starts doing secret projects that aren't revealed till he passes on. So he's almost miming the new corporate media world, where the projects done by corporations or even Hollywood, they don't tell you how they're figuring out and what design and focus groups they've figured out to make their movies. They're doing things secretly, secretly, and they are corporate secrecy, and that includes government and intelligence operations in the military. And then that includes, I forget where I was going to go with that, the You begin in 1970s, the video camera comes along. So now the TV environment of the 50s, which was invisible, and everybody, as I said last hour, is celebrating the movie values in different ways, from Warhol's pop art to the critics celebrating the auteur theory of directors as the big deal, the John Fords and John Hustons in the movie era in the first half of the 20th century. But along comes this little decentralizing video camera, and video becomes the art form in the 70s by artists like Nam June Paik that McLuhan writes about in Understanding Media, the Korean artist and friend of Yoko Ono, and part of the Fluxus art movement. They are actually making art outside of the museum culture, and they're using video. So we're now into the satellite computer phase, and the TV screen becomes an art form, right? Through video artists.
Okay, now I just want to make sure, as I'm catching this whole pattern, what you started out saying is that in the first phase and second phase, the McLuhan said that the extensions were unconscious. So nature, first nature extending itself into second nature, was something that was being done unconsciously. So you've basically just run the wrap of the entire movement of history through these unconscious extensions and the reflecting thereof as the new environment reflects back on the old environment, the extension thereof, and categorizes it or chronicles it or whatever through art, music, and sculpture, as you've said. Now, what I'm curious about now is this has all occurred, okay, fine, but you said in the third phase that now humans become aware, they become conscious that they are creating everything. And this was one of Ion's points that they started with. So now you're saying in the third phase of this extensions of non-physical, these extensions will no longer happen unconsciously. These old environments, or the new environment miming the old environment or making it an art form is no longer going to occur. The human would now be aware of the new environment
faster. So
faster.
I'm going to qualify. Yeah, faster. So you have, basically I was describing the first phase and the history up to the satellite, which is the end of the first phase. That's the final extension of the planet itself, right? Extension of first nature. So that's by the late 50s, early 60s. So what the second phase starts, the Android meme. So it's the invisible environment. So what starts to be celebrated in the 1670s? That's not noticing the Android meme. It's the sex revolution, the feminist revolution, the Civil War revolution, the civil rights revolution, the Third World Revolution. It's total turmoil over the whole planet as people try to improve on 19th century values. Let's make education happen for everybody. Let's not be have this patriarchal left hemisphere of men running women. Let's have everybody be equally accessed to the electric discarnate state. You see what I'm saying here? That the revolutions of the body, of the first nature body, happening in the 60s, 70s, are all doomed because they're just trying to retrieve, again, walking into the future, looking back, and that people think the 60s will lead to greater love and greater this and greater that, and all these, and the right-wingers think there'll be more autonomy and we don't need the government. Meanwhile, The huge environmental effects of the Android meme is sneaking up everybody and crushes everybody by the 80s with Reaganism. So every revolution, there was every kind of tribal retrieval of values of the first phase that are being celebrated in the abundant and glorious 60s, 70s, and early 80s on the image level and in the lifestyles, like things that cultures had not seen ever, you know, it's for known history, the freedoms and expressions. Just take the beatniks and how they celebrated the automobile and went roaring around North America and celebrating the values of the automobile, right? And jazz, which is the radio environment. So the beatniks are a celebration of and media dynamics of the radio and the automobile. But a lot of the humanist revolutions people think are being completed in the 60s, 70s. Humanists are literate values. So the whole history of analog, first nature being extended into second nature is happening and trying to be improved upon in the 60s and 70s. You have Bucky Fuller and his utopian designs. These are well-known guys, but none of them, but there are many other variations of these utopian dreams. There's all kinds of different writers and thinkers and movements happening. So it's a quite amazing, at first perceived in the 60s as an optimistic time. But as the 70s came forward into the 80s, people got depressed because all their rearview mirror dreams of first nature technologies having a better situation for all humans are being undermined by the rapidity of the Android meme, which is ignoring any of these revolutions and broadcasting them, but dropping them and having another revolution take over, you know, 10 minutes later, and then a half hour later have a commercial, and then another third revolution comes in. And it's the turnover of these retrieved values of all kinds of cultures that are obsolete, but are what people think is happening. They put their values into the rearview mirror and miss the virtualization that's sneaking up in everybody, and that's Android meme. Okay, so what does the Android meme, once it's happening in the 90s, what is it presenting as values? What do people think they're engaging when they get their computer? Oh, I can write and publish without having to go through a publishing house. I can make footage on movie or video camera and broadcast it. In other words, all the analog media of the electrical phase becomes superhumanized. So the actual electric phase of the early part of the 20th century is made available to everybody with the internet. You can now become make your own movie or make your own composition. You can do anything with the old Gutenberg arts, painting, sculpture, movies. Well, movies are really a post-Gutenberg culture, but let's say painting, sculpture, and music. But basically, in the internet, the people are turning the electric media, the movies and radio like you cited, and aren't making painting. They're not making little musical stuff. And with rock music, that's not traditional music and song. That's electrified music. That involves the electrification of music. So the electrified media of the first half of the 20th century are the content of the Android meme by the 90s. So everybody's looking back and saying, now I can make an electric medium, an electric expression, what we call the analog media. That's the art form of the period leading up to 2000. Okay?
Okay, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you.
So what comes after the Android meme is obsolesced in the late Bush era, 2006, 2008? The Android meme, the second phase, is going to be obsolesced by a new hidden environment, the third phase, which is iondom, and the extension of non-physical. So you see a curious extension of analog media in Web 2.0, where people have even more autonomy, more power to organize their media. They can now start to organize digital media, or even the first phase, Web 1.0, as the content of Web 2.0. So that goes on from 2004 up to 2008, 9, and 10. But there is a collapse happens there because these phases go faster. The manuscript phase goes 1,500 years. The printed book phase goes 300 years. The movie, TV, and analog media goes 100 years, telegraph to satellite. Then you have the digital second phase, the Android meme phase. It is 10 years, 95 to 2005. And then you have the five-year phase of Web 2.0, 2004 to 2009. And then it wipes itself out, you see? So by then, people are seeing some variations of the rearview mirror nature of human perception. That would be group human perception, not your God self, not your mystery body self, or what do you want to call the power of your word and all the values that Ion celebrates. We're talking about the world of social mortar and language and media and history as recorded by any kind of technology, from the photograph to your own file folders on your computer, and then your own websites. So archiving is a big deal in Web 1.0, and then creating satirical archives is an aspect of Web 2.0. So there's all kinds of things you could go into on the trends and fads over the last 15 years of what happened in computing, what happened in the populist use of. Remember the first part of Web 1.0 was MUDs, where people would put on a different identity and do like a Second Life situation? User identities or something. What does MUD stand for? Forget what it called.
Multi-user display, where they would have three or four different. That's when they were doing all the gaming.
And
the role-play games, Dungeons and Dragons and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and avatars. So it's almost like Web 2.0 didn't bother participating in, even though games, all these media keep going. They still make books. They still make movies, you know, analog media. They just aren't forming people's collective memes anymore. They're not the things that is the hidden ground of generation. So in Web 2.0, it's interesting. People are actually not sharing information. They're creating their own scene. And so the complement to that is endless checking your email because people are afraid of this new effect and they want to stay connected. So endless staring at your little iPhone to see who's been connecting with you. So there's a panic of connecting. As the disconnecting happens, as each person becomes a super god with Web 2.0, all right? Look what I have. I've got an archive. We're going to hear, 1,000 hours of my radio since 1984. Whoever thought that they would, back in the 70s, it'd be on the radio, first of all. That was part of the decentralization in the 80s, was you could get on college radio and create your own show, and then you could tape it, and then you have an archive, but you'd have the cassettes, but you had no way of displaying the cassettes until the digital world came along. Then Steve Reimer takes all my cassettes and digitizes them, and I got this incredible autobiography. It's an autobiography of me by Steve Reimer. I didn't make the autobiography. I provided the content, but he made the environment, right? So you have a biography, and it's my experience on recordings that are organized by Steve Reimer. So he's the autobiographer on one level there. So all the literate categories of publisher, author, and biography and autobiography are merged in the digital era. That's just a tiny example. So you have this glorious production where in Web 2.0 where huge industrial bureaucracies and political bureaucracies are toppled by some guy in the audience who videotapes some politician doing something scandalous, right? One little guy can topple that David versus Goliath. And that happened several times in the 2006 elections, American elections. And then you have this paranoia in 2008 of people running their campaigns, McCain versus Obama? I think that's what it was. And they're very worried about getting the internet users, forget what they called them, but the instant groups, it's almost like mob rule. The Obama's campaign had the edge. They knew how to court the digital Web 2.0 world better than McCain did. All right? So there is the audience, the virtual audience. Nobody can see them. And they're publishing news items and reporting on things that goes faster than the old analog newspapers. So he had pretty chaotic, fun time in Web 2.0. But then that flipped into its opposite and collapsed, and nobody knew what to communicate anymore. And that then brought in 2009, and you could say, Ian has said, that they were sneaking around me and Carol and JW in 2005 and 6, setting us up to go move to Maui and JW to do what he was going to do. So it was sneaking up before 2009, but then it burst forth in 2009, but it's an invisible environment, right? It's not that well known as an environment, but it is affecting everything. So then you say, how does this relate to you? Let's see, are you getting the phases, and then we get the end of the Android meme, and we move into phase three? Well, what it's doing for you is that you feel pretty great with your RNA drops and your remag. I mean, you're quite ecstatic about it. You're actually even helping sell it and promote it. So that is what the extension of non-physical is doing to people. You're an example. Now,
right.
We can develop this a little more. Okay, you were talking about the recognition of change. So definitely anybody, it's interesting you look at the way pop culture was, the whatever phrase that came up. The radical hippie thing of doing your own thing, which was, you know, suppressed and jailed, became normal in the 80s and 90s. Everybody, President Nixon would be talking about doing your own thing, or Reagan. That was the old decentralized analog electric media effect. Everybody could create their own content in the electric vortex. But that, and so people would say whatever because they knew any kind of change could happen. So the Evergreens point out to me that the difference between the Middle East and North America is that Americans know that change is happening and they can't stop it, so they embrace it. And that's because they've been involved in the web to the digital Android meme phase more than the rest of the world. But you have the Arabs just coming into analog electric media, and they say, yes, we know change is inevitable, but let's control it. Let's stop it. Let's modulate it. Do a little more balanced. And that's expressed by, don't let the great Satan America run over us here in the Middle East in our cultures. And the great Satan is a projection by the Arab countries of the Android meme. That's how they see it. But the Americans, they don't. They want radical change. They're not worried about preserving anything anymore. What they tried to preserve in the 1670s, those revolutions, they by the 90s is long gone. And now you can't even, supposedly, the meme is, that the kids don't even bother talking to anybody. They're not interested in any chemical body operation. They're not interested in any permanent sexual relationship. They're not interested in any creative relationship. They just express themselves constantly and interact in a tactile interplay. So that is what the slower cultures object against, this immoral, appears to be not caring about, not respecting your elders, little kids running big corporations. It's so upsetting to the slower cultures that are just getting used to first half of the electric media of the first half of the 20th century, right? So, but they are rapidly being digitized, and they can't stop it. So here we are, and with everybody recognizing inevitable change and then taking a position of it, I'm either getting out of here, suicide is rampant, or I'm just going to be join in the porn world and make porn of myself or make this media or that media or do anything to get a job. And you have the sense of no money and a kind of colossal depression that the American economy can't get out of. That is the representative collapse of the Android meme. And then sneaking among that as a new environment is solutions to this despondency of the chemical body confronted with the chip body and the astral body, that's the Pope and the religions, confronting and the native groups. Remember how Melody Rose is her name? What's Melody's
yes.
full name?
Melody Rose Parker. Melody Rose.
Yeah, she talks about the shock over the last year or so for her of the great First Nations Aboriginal wisdom and its failure to deal with Web 2.0. You know, we've talked to her about that on Payday, right? So
correct.
even the ecological wisdom factories, the Aboriginal groups, which were very popular in the 70s and 80s and 90s, that was all part of the fear of global warming and we've got to become a green society. They are not communicating that Aboriginal wisdom, which had the edge for 20 years. The Pope and the Protestant religions don't have a prayer. Their prayer doesn't even work. All this falling away of basic human depth wisdom opens a window for the anarchist, opens the microphone for the spiritual anarchist known as Ion. That was a long joke. I spoke for what, half an hour to finally get to the punchline. McLuhan laid out three revolutions. There was the first Copernican revolution, and that was Copernicus himself who threw man to the edge of the universe. It was no longer a geocentric universe, it was a heliocentric. So the sun way out there was the center, not where we were. All right, so that was a big trauma when Copernicus changed the image of man and women and humans. The second Copernican revolution was represented by Immanuel Kant. 1780s into the 1800s, the discovery of inner space. That's what Kant, McLuhan says, brought in. Now, that's intuiting the invisible electric environment that's coming, you know, the inner space of tactility and proprioception that is part of the first phase of the electric environment. So the second Copernican revolution was Kant, and then that would be, say, 100 years later, you have the third Copernican revolution called pattern recognition. And pattern recognition is seen in the arts and in advertising and in all kinds of information designing. That is the third Copernican revolution, which by the 70s, this pattern recognition has become addictive, McLuhan said. And most people were trying to keep up. It's almost like McLuhan said in that excerpt I played two shows ago, I played it last Sunday, where last Saturday night, McLuhan was saying the real job of the future is knowing. Now, what he means, he doesn't mean ionic knowing, though that can be a subplot. He means in the social mortar world that pattern recognition and keeping up with what's happening so that you are able to appear still cognizant of what's going on. Most people watch the news and all these things, and eventually got to John Stewart. Why bother taking it seriously? Just give me the pattern, but present it humorously. This is the news. You find out what people are talking about, and you're able to have something to say, and speech is not that important in the multi-body world, but you have something to say that makes you seem that you're still tuned into the present. So the real job is knowing, and humans got exhausted trying to keep up with the knowing over the last 15 years. So it got to the point, and Ion said, people do not respect any of the old patterns of any institutions, and they're kind of tired of looking for new patterns, so they would do the whatever. So in comes Ion as an anti-environment to the rapid pattern recognition that the Android meme was engaging in among its parts. See, by the 80s, the pattern recognition, the third Copernican revolution, is being done by the machines, and humans are dropping out and giving up in keeping, and they actually go adopt a pattern like Christianity and become, rabid fanatics about one meme. Rather than having to adapt stuff, you just pretend, well, I have this religious awareness or some kind of special occult awareness, and I'm superior to all the pattern recognition, and this one pattern will get me through the day. It's like people who become nuts over tarot cards or astrology or over following Wall Street. You know what I mean? They
right.
specialize in pattern recognition, and the economy and wealth was built on that. So a lot of people made money in the addicted pattern recognition phase. But it all collapses in the late 2000s, what's called the naughty knots, and there is no capability of pattern recognition anymore on any level. So the fourth Copernican revolution is Ion, who comes on and says, forget trying to think. Forget trying to form patterns. Don't even look at the outer kingdom. Don't even look at what's on the media. And that's relevant to the fact, if you're looking for facts, that none of it's verifiable because it's virtual and can be faked in any way. But also, that's one part of the outer kingdom, but just general keeping track of what people are saying in the news and the general headlines, that's the last gasp of a centralized meme, is irrelevant to you when you live in a media environment that you can create your own spaces with your Web 2.0, right? You create your own religions and institutions and news things. You guys do this all the time. You're always putting out Iondom news. and creating, you don't tell people that an earthquake happened or something happened in politics or in movies. You say, in my world, we are on the radio next week and you should be there. You're just modulating your own empire, media empire. So this point about pattern recognition got exhausted. The third Copernican revolution. So as people learn different variations of and levels of sophistication about pattern recognition, the third Copernican revolution, many people went to universities and listened to professors give patterns based on whatever discipline they taught. And people were processing this and calling it an education. not knowing that what was sneaking up on them was the unpatterned world, which led to the collapse of banking at the end of the 2000s, because the banks couldn't trust each other's patterns, right? With the cliche phrase subprime mortgages, nobody could understand them anymore. Who owed who what? That's an example of breakdown of pattern. So Ion is here to offer the original retrieves pattern. Now, there was the retrieval aspect. Yes, now you can go into doing a tetrad on the third phase of the extension of non-physical by the Android meme, by technology, and by us, and by non-physical. You could say that what's extending the non-physical, the chemical body, the astral body, the TV body, and chip body are all extending the mystery landscape. We're all engaged in it now, all the bodies. So phases one and two are what is extending non-physical. But we call it non-physical because that's the new unknown part. The mystery landscape gets into the game and creates the mystery body. Let's see. What is extending non-physical? Well, I've added a new dimension. The four and five bodies are extending non-physical. So that can include the chip body, where you passively watch the Android meme create its own stuff among its parts, or you can engage in talk shows on CNN, Crossfire, that's part of the TV body, or Rush Limbaugh, and phone in and state your opinion, or you can be off meditating and doing yoga or ayahuasca, that would be the astral body, or you can be fanatically involved in your job, or not having a job and doing crime in the chemical body. You can see in Iondom that Ionettes come in at different levels. You could say, well, I'm just going to relax now. I don't have to worry about anything. That would be an extension of the chip body part of the third phase of non-physical. You see what I'm saying? The TV body part would be you and Matthew Hurtado going out there and making advertising, right? That would be your response to Iondom. And then the astral, you have someone like Katie Thomas, I think it was, and maybe Tracy. They did not think of spiritual astral issues. They were just, you know, rampant materialists. For Katie to even talk about spiritual realities is all new to her. I mean, she was part of Marianne Williamson, but I think it was her or Tracy or somebody was saying that they never thought about these post-death issues. You know what I'm saying? They just thought they had one life and were trying to live it to the ultimate. So that would be an astral body response to the extension of non-physical. And then the chemical body would be people enjoying the interpreting Ion as, I can eat anything I want, I can enjoy any physical operation now, I don't have my neuroses about it. That would be a physical body response as a subset of extending the non-physical. You getting my point here? I've really never said this before, so I'm making it up as I go along, but it seems to be a pattern to make today. You've got you can hear in the different approaches of Ionettes, and they often disagree what they get out of Ion. You can categorize the different approaches, the different slogans that come out of different kinds of Ionettes. You can match it up with a particular body. But what's really happening is all the bodies, and that's the Bob interpretation, and that's why you got to learn a bit of this history if you want to be on the leading edge with Bob, who's not responding just from one particular body angle.